Ryan Gosling gets his rocks off as a middle school science teacher on a mission to save the universe in the highly anticipated sci-fi adventure Project Hail Mary. And Samara Weaving returns for another game of Bride and Seek in the lowly anticipated horror sequel Ready or Not 2, Here I Come. All that and more on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes.
Planet will go extinct, including us. Dr. Grace, the world is counting on you.
No, I'm sorry.
Yes, this week on the show, I'll be reviewing Project Hail Mary. Read you the IMDb synopsis. Gives a lot away. Gives as much away as the trailer for this film gives away. Science teacher Ryland Grace wakes up alone on a spaceship light years from Earth. As his memory returns, he uncovers a mission to stop a mysterious substance killing the sun and save Earth. An unexpected friendship may be the key. Project Hail Mary, directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. They've jumped between animation with the Lego movie, and they're one of the big creative forces behind the Spider-Verse films. They've done live action with the Jump Street movies, and they were also infamously uncoupled from the Solo Han Solo Star Wars movie, eventually directed by Ron Howard. So what do Lord and Miller have for us this time? Project Hail Mary, sci-fi adventure. It's based on the novel by Andy Weir, Davis's own Andy Weir, local boy made good. Script by Drew Goddard, who also adapted Andy Weir's The Martian for Ridley Scott. But this isn't just a Project Hail Mary. It's a Hail Mary full of grace. Ryland Grace, that is. Fun wordplay. Ryan Gosling plays Ryland Grace. He's your average, ordinary, everyday middle school teacher who's also the most brilliant scientist in the world. Don't think about it. Don't do it. Don't. As the film begins, Grace, as the synopsis has already informed us, wakes up on a ship floating through space. He's got two dead crew members, he's all alone otherwise, and he has no memory of how he got there or why he's there and what all these robots are trying to do to him. So he's perplexed, as you can imagine, and after this initial period of disorientation, it slowly starts to come back to him, all of this, his mission and his backstory in dreams and in memories, and this kind of continues throughout the film. But again, since the trailer and the synopsis give you everything away, I can just reveal it all. It's why just let it unfurl like that. He's on a last-ditch mission, last chance, Hail Mary, to save a dying Earth by traveling outside our solar system. He's been researching this destructive space bacteria they call astrophage, and it's essentially eating the universe, just eating suns and planets and stars, and it's just eating up the universe, as it does. And just as present Grace, not memory Grace, is starting to realize, oh my God, this gravity and the stakes of his mission and that he's out here trying to save Earth, he's not just stuck and confused, he makes first contact with this alien creature, this sort of rock spider-like creature who Grace dubs Rocky. And Rocky's also a scientist. He's also been sent to study and cure the astrophage because it's also destroying his home planet. So it forces these two incompatible species to work together as scientists and as friends. And a lot of the film is like, how do we do that? How do we communicate with each other? Rocky doesn't have a face. He doesn't have eyes. So he sees through echolocation. So how do you make that work when Ryland is all screens? You know, everything, all of his technology is screens. So it's really... that's pretty fun. He even gives Rocky a voice, and their relationship is actually really touching. It's pretty impressive considering, like I said, Rocky doesn't have a face. So that old Spielberg axiom that a creature needs eyes in order for the audience to connect with it. The film disproves that and does it, I would say, gracefully. Ryland gracefully, whatever. It's Ryan Gosling's show, though. I mean, this is a real, almost a one-man show for him. Sandra Hüller gives us is in there in the flashbacks, but most of the film is Gosling by himself or Gosling with Rocky, right? And Gosling carries this effortlessly, really effortlessly, while also delivering a breakneck physical performance. It's pretty impressive. I think back to Ryan Gosling when he kind of first started to emerge, and I feel like initially he was aspiring to sort of follow in Leo DiCaprio's footsteps, you know, a movie star, yeah, but a capital A actor, right? DiCaprio didn't, I mean, he gets $20 million a year, but he could have taken the easy money and just made one effortless thing after another, but instead he chose to work with great directors, make these really kind of dark, substantive movies, burying himself in his parts. Gosling seemed to kind of be heading down that road, but over the last 10 years, man, he is all dad jokes and slapsticks and just eager to please. I mean, he is really, because it's like he became what Hollywood always wanted DiCaprio to become, just charming and beautiful and likable and family friendly. Gosling has really leaned into the goofy dad personality. And the role of Ryland Grace and the way it's written by Andy Weir and adapted by Drew Goddard, that suits him to a T, because maybe too well, I think, to a T, because honestly, I found the nonstop quipping and the smirking and the pratfalls and all the bits, just like the presenters of the Oscars, it was a bit much, I thought. Like, this guy, Gracie, wakes up in outer space, doesn't know where he is, immediately he's doing bits. Get him on a jet plane, bits. Meet an alien, bits. Life-threatening spacewalk to save every known and unknown universe, bits, 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 and not like a minority of the bits are actually funny. A lot of it's just too cute for school for my taste. But again, this is the sort of lane that Gosling's going, and it really overlaps well with, you know, what I think the audience wants from him, you know, at heart, and what the film is doing as well. So Project Hail Mary, it hits all the beats, but it hits all the bits as well. And it does feel a little forced sometimes. It's successful at everything it does, but it moves so lurch-like from a doofy comedy to 2001-style sci-fi awe, and again, to sentimentality a little in the relationship with Rocky. But at its center, there's not much there. Like, the astrophage itself as, like, an antagonist, that's not a commentary on anything. You know, it's just floating space bacteria. It's not anyone's fault. It's not, you know, it has nothing to do with anything that's happening in the world now or ever. It's just random space bacteria, and now we got to fix it. Like, this is not a movie that is taking any sides except for a overall positive hope kind of side, a nebulous, undefined hope, right? I'm seeing a lot of people saying that it's a very hopeful film. And I think, you know, maybe hope here is just the absence of, like, doom and blame. Grace is also kind of an absent figure. Like, we hear in passing about an ex-girlfriend and professional setbacks, but that's nothing that defines him. What I think defines him is regular guy who does science and makes 1990s pop culture references. And again, that's fine, and that's, I think, what the audience wants, and I think this movie is going to be a huge hit, but that just felt a little bit thin to me. And even the, you know, like The Martian, this is a process movie, but like the protagonist, it's all a little bit glib. Everything is like, here's this insurmountable problem, wait, what if we did this, and then it's fixed forever. That's it. It never comes back. And I'm being a little harsh on it here. It's a consistently entertaining movie. It has everything you want out of a popcorn film, right? It's 2.5 hours. It's an epic, but it does fly by. It really shoots from one thing to another. And maybe that's why it's not, like, sticking for me as, like, a film of substance. It's a crowd pleaser, and Rocky is a real crowd pleaser as well. Gosling's eager to please, like I said. Rocky is also a great creation of puppetry and animation, and he's the real breakout character. Overall, great use of effects, mixing practical effects and animation and digital effects and things like that. So a lot to like here. I'm not as enthusiastic as some other people. Hype is off the charts for this thing. And I'm not here to throw water on anyone's enthusiasm. You be as enthusiastic as you like. And as with the awards, my opinion doesn't change a frame of the film, shouldn't change anyone's perception of the film unless it does. I'm just here to express my opinion of the film that I watched and my experience with it. And in my opinion, everyone, dial it back a bit, all right? It's not a life changer, but it is a good old-fashioned good time at the movies. So I'm going to say ultimately in the bump it or dump it scale, I say bump it, and you're probably going to go see it anyway, so what do you care? But overall, bump it.
911, what's your emergency?
We're here. Where are the cops?
Where are you?
We're following a wall to the main gate. I don't see a cop car.
The unit is close. Just wait there at the gate and they will see you.
You bitch.
Did you see that? Nice. So, you know it was your voice on the phone, fucking dumbass.
That was a clip from Ready or Not 2, Here I Come. That's the film I'll be reviewing next. But before we get into it, I did want to say just a couple of things about the Academy Awards that happened last Sunday. Now, what is there to say at this point, right? Like, it happened, it's over, we've all moved on, no one cares. This sticks in my craw, though. They are so quick to rush the winners off stage. Like, here's your award, life-changing moment, summation of your career today, total validation on you. And 20 seconds into the speech, the orchestra starts tuning up. Get them off the stage, right? And, you know, we think, all right, well, it's like it's already a 3-4 hour show. Like, you know, we can't go on forever, right? But that bum's rush to get winners off stage is preceded by these presenters doing endless bits. Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, or the Bridesmaids girls, not just endless bits, not just really unfunny endless bits, but multi-part unfunny endless bits. Like, do a 5-minute bit, get the winner on stage, rush them right off, and then come out and do part two of this awful bit. If you're not going to do anything funny, really funny, like, just read the boilerplate off of the goddamn teleprompter and let the winners speak. Quit hogging the spotlight. It's really pretty shameless stuff. About the actual winners, you know, good for Paul Thomas Anderson. He's one of my all-time favorite filmmakers, of course. I was actually surprised. Darcy asked me during the telecast, she's like, oh, he's won before, right? And I was like, oh, yeah, he's won. I think he won screenplay for There Will... No. Never won a single Oscar. And it doesn't change anything, doesn't alter one frame of his films, doesn't change my perception of his work, and it shouldn't change anyone else's perception of his work, especially when you consider all the masters who never won an Oscar. You got Hitchcock and Wells and Howard Hawks and Stanley Kubrick and go on and on. And that fact they haven't won an Oscar doesn't diminish their greatness, doesn't accentuate their greatness, and again, doesn't change a frame of the film. Nothing has changed. All the awards have been handed out, and nothing has actually changed. But as a cinephile, when you look at all those historical slights of Kubrick and Hitchcock and so on, it is slightly gratifying when a great filmmaker actually gets their award and sort of enters that company. So congratulations to Paul Thomas Anderson in one battle after another. Sincerely, good job. And, you know, congrats to all the winners. But again, who cares? And it doesn't change a thing. Every movie has exactly the same as it was before. One last little bit of trivia, and this will maybe help you in Oscar forecasting moving on. But we're on this very strange 14-year run of particular titles winning the Oscar. Movies with a particular title. If you go back to 2012, when Argo was the surprise Best Picture winner, 9 of the last 14 Best Picture winners have been one-word titles. Of the other 5, 4 have had titles 4 words or longer. The Shape of Water, Everything Everywhere, All at Once, and now One Battle After Another. And what was the big competition with One Battle After Another? Sinners. One word title, 4 or more words. 2-word, 3-word titles, it doesn't happen. Green Book, that was the only outlier in 2018 of a 2 or 3-word title film winning the Oscars. And someday, I hope a film with no title wins the Oscars. That to me, that'll be a great day for title representation, whatever. That's enough talk about the Oscars for ever.
The game will begin.
They're coming. They're coming. We got
in 5, 4, 3, 2. Do you have any questions?
Can I have a cigarette?
The heads of the council families will try to kill you and your sister. Whoever does wins the high seat and controls everything.
Everything?
The world.
You're telling me you didn't know your fiancé was in a devil
cult? There's more. Yeah, I'm going to review Ready or Not to : Here I come. IMDb synopsis for the film. After surviving one deadly game, Grace and her sister Faith must now outrun 4 rival families competing for a powerful throne. Winner takes all. Ready or Not : Here I Come, directed by Matt Bettinelli-Olpin and Tyler Gillett. They directed the 5th and Scream films, as well as the first Ready or Not movie back in 2019. If you saw the first film, Ready or Not, you know that not too many cast members are going to be returning for the sequel because they all exploded. There's more explosions here. Except, of course, unexploded is our ambushed heroine, Grace. Wait, fuck. She's also named Grace. Oh, man. Mix it up, hacks. Hollywood hacks. Grace is played by Scream Queen Samara Weaving. And this script, apparently, Bettinelli, Olpin, and Gillett, they were writing another film, an original screenplay, when they were asked to make a Ready or Not movie, and they said, all right, well, let's, you know, make a couple of changes here, and now it's a Ready or Not sequel. New cast members here, because, again, everyone exploded at the end of the previous film. Sarah Michelle Gellar, Elijah Wood, Sean Hattasey, and even David Cronenberg shows up. Basically the same premise. Everyone's trying to kill... They're Satanists, rich Satanists, and they're trying to kill Grace in order to appease their Satanist master and hang on to their wealth and power. So it's a little bit of like a horror film version of Knives Out, like themes and premises, or at least the first two Knives Out films. The themes and premises, it's pretty similar, but it's got more of a horror edge as opposed to the whodunit of Knives Out. But it's expanded a little bit this time to include more families, rival families, not just the one family from Ready or Not, and we've moved from the mansion to now this sprawling luxury resort. Movie actually starts right from the last shot of Ready or Not and keeps going beyond the final line of the film, Grace's line about in-laws, and keeps going and going and going and going. And what we find out is, little did she know, Grace, she thought, okay, I'm just wiping these people out. I get to survive. They all explode. By taking out that family of Satanists in the first film, she destabilized a worldwide cabal of Satanist families who decide to extend this game of homicidal hide-and-seek in a quest to achieve ultimate power for their bloodlines, to rise to the top of the throne. So now you have these families, not just the one family, but all these families are coming after Grace. So she's once again the target, but along the way, she has her own family issues to work through because her estranged sister, Faith, inadvertently becomes part of the game. Like I said, same basic story, same basic premise. The difference really between the original and this is the difference between a story that is a slowly unfolding mystery and a story where we already know the mystery, but we're still going to spend the entire first third of the film recapping part one and setting up part two. It is a nearly 40-minute recap setup to start the movie in a 108-minute movie. It is appalling. It really, just like the amount of wasted time in this movie, especially in that first third. And I think a big part of the problem is the sister character, Faith, played by Catherine Newton, who is just obnoxious eye-rolling and yaying and really disengaged bickering in the middle of all of this, like, slaughter and Satanism. And it's just, really rubs you the wrong way. And the way that the film zigzags between, like, people with machetes and spontaneous explosions and things, and then, yeah, let's, like, have a sensitive bicker fest about our checkered past, and then machetes and machine guns and buckets of blood, and then, you know, it's just such a, it becomes really obnoxious. In the middle third, Bellinelli, Ulpin, and Gillett, they finally buckle down, they get the job done. There is one really fantastic sequence where Grace and one of her pursuers, who is also wearing a wedding dress, too pointless to explain, but they blind each other with pepper spray and they're attacking each other, but it cuts to them just like throwing wild haymakers and screaming like, I'm going to kill you, bitch. And they're not within 10, 20 feet of each other. It's a pretty great sight gag and a really good sequence overall. Other than that, it's spotty. And really, like, did I care about who these people were throwing haymakers and falling all over the place and why they were doing it and any of the, no. It's just a funny bit. And there are some funny throwaway bits here. I laughed a few times. It's not a complete waste, but it's very, very spotty. And now having seen four films by this duo, they're creative in gulps and gasps, but they falter in big picture and small picture. It's like they can nail a shot, but they are just so unable to manufacture suspense or tell a story. It's... yeah, I don't know. And overall, this is just a pretty pale imitation of the first film. The finale's fun. It's not enough to redeem it. If you've seen the first movie and you're an OCD completist like me, you could do worse. But otherwise, I'm going to say dump it. So to recap, I'm giving a satisfied and entertained yet not all that enthusiastic bump it to Project Hail Mary in theaters right now. And there is a disappointed, but not, hateful dump it for Ready or Not to : Here I Come, also playing in theaters right now. And that's all I've got for you on this episode of Single Take with Daniel Barnes. But let me ask you this before I go. Are you a fan of classic and or foreign and or art house films? If you checked yes, check out the Cannon Fodder podcast. It's more of me, but hang on before you go away. But I co-host that show with the man, the comedy legend, Corky McDonnell. Earlier this week, we released our review of David Lean's marvelously gloomy and wonderful 1945 romance, Brief Encounter. On the Cannon Fodder podcast, we review films from the Sight and Sound Critics Top 250. We have new episodes every other Tuesday, and at the end of each episode, we pick the film we'll review on the next episode. But I'm going to spoil it for you. Coming up in two Tuesdays, we have Robert Mitchum in Charles Laughton's stone-cold masterpiece, The Night of the Hunter. If you've never seen The Night of the Hunter, watch it. If you saw The Night of the Hunter like 10, 30, whatever years ago, and you don't really remember it, watch it. If you watch Night of the Hunter once a year as kind of an annual, watch it. It's easy to find on your streaming services out there. Find it, watch it, live it, feel it, experience it, and then come back. Listen to me and Quirky review the film on the Cannon Fodder podcast, March 31st. And stay tuned for more episodes of Single Take. If you want to support me, Quirky, or any of these endeavors, please visit daredaniel.com. and find Support the Show in the menu. Your support is essential. Truly, it is essential. Now more than or at least the same as ever. And it is, as always, immensely appreciated. Ready or Not to : Here I Come tickets ain't free, folks. They were with my Cinemark credits, but still, you want me to use all my credits on this, really? Okay. Until next time, I'm Daniel Barnes saying, woe unto hypocrites, and save me a seat in the back row. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.